This is a HeadGum Original.
We're ready to weave a tale of maritime love. It's getting exciting around here. It's a confusing story, but it's a really catchy song. I'm not quite sure how we're going to get to the bottom of this one, but our job is clear.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam, punch it up.
You thought that this was confusing? I thought it was pretty straightforward. There's a girl in the harbor town.
Mm-hmm.
She works.
Sure.
Laying whiskey down.
Yeah. That part's in the exposition. Oh, yeah. I'm confident about
that.
Listen,
pretty much it.
You're listening to Punch Up with a Jam, the podcast in which we take the greatest hits of all time and we make them even greater. Is this week's song one of the greatest hits?
Yeah. Yes, sure. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew Gregory.
I'm the other host and Andrew's brother, Evan Gregory.
And we're very excited to welcome back to the podcast, his third time on the podcast, his first time with us, John Gabris.
John Gabris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
John's resume is just titanic. This is a man who hosts a really funny podcast called Action Boys. What's the show you're on right now? 100 Places to Party Before You Die?
Correct. And 101 Places. Get it right in case we need the extra episode. Bad. No.
It's a limited series. There are only going to be 101 episodes.
We called the shot. We have eight airing right now, and if we don't get another season, it will be funny to say we came 93 short of our goal, but it would be even better to do more.
Yes. Yeah, there are 93 left, and they died too soon.
Yeah, bummer.
But I saw something else on your IMDb page that I got really excited about, which is on the Netflix show Pretty Smart. You play a guy called Sauna Dude
or Sauna Gary. Yeah.
Sauna Gary.
Yeah, yeah, it's a show about, it was a one season show about like hot dummies that were all, like young hot dummies that were all friends. And I played, a bunch of them worked at a gym. And I played like an old guy who fell asleep in the sauna and then faints. And I got to do like a stunt in a towel, which is, you know, my friends created the show. So it was really a real lineup of like, and we need a guy who's willing to be shirtless in a towel, come across as sweaty, kind of juxtaposed against two young, beautiful people, be kind of terrifying and look different, and then we need him to wipe out. And I was like, you got it. It's sick, right? I'm in. I need health insurance.
Now, I saw that one of the writers was Mono Agapian. He's a friend of the pod.
And you You did your own stunt, the wipeout.
I did my own stunt. That's right. They didn't have to bring in a giant hairless tan guy to play my double.
No body doubles. Speaking of 101 things you want to do before you die, do your own stunt in a towel.
Yeah, I want to be squibbed. I have so much. All the shit I want to do in Hollywood is all like based on like 80s and 90s movies. Has no bearing. I don't care about actual success. I want to jump out of a helicopter into like an ocean or something like that. I want a couple of cool. I want to get my neck broke by the protagonist. You know, I want to be like some dumb heavy who just gets his neck snapped from behind. Like,
yeah,
these are the goals I have in life.
Not like 2022 Danny Trejo, like 1991 Danny Trejo, who has
no
lines, just looks a very specific way, and then is killed. He's like, he's not the boss, but he's like maybe the boss of the first fight in the whole movie.
Yeah, I kind
of
want like maybe the boss is there, and then he leaves the room, and he's like, these guys will take care of it, and it's me and some other beefy dude, and we come over to the protagonist, Clooney, Pitt, Damon, whoever, Jonathan Majors, whoever it might be, and they get up and we're like, we're working him over a little bit, and then he gets the best of us and snaps.
Yeah.
Or I'm standing by, like about to punch the sidekick in the stomach who we have, and then the protagonist drops down behind me and I don't even see him, and they have like their eye to eye communication of like, don't worry, I got you, and then I get my neck snapped and I get to do like the big potato sack crumple.
Yeah, but you'd clearly be the best bad guy out of that lower tier of bad guys in the room.
Yes, I would have the sort of like, oh, he's the featured henchman.
Right,
like,
not boss antagonist, but yeah, boss henchman, lead henchman.
Yeah, doing mini your... boss, if you're using video game jargon, we could call it a mini boss.
Yes,
henchman, henchman Gary.
Yeah.
6'2", 300-pound mini boss. Got it. I would love to be called mini once in my fucking life.
Doing your own stunts, would you say that Tom Cruise is your direct or indirect inspiration?
I will say I really love Tom Cruise. Like, I'm obsessed with the guy. Like,
really?
He's a huge hero of mine. He has a few dings on the old automobile, but there's something about his love of movies is infectious and contagious, and like, he's an artist, but his art is sort of like weirdly mainstream blockbusters, and that's such an interesting route for like an artist to pick in modern, like, I'm at, like,
100%. That's what he decided to do. It's like, this is my art, is trying to break 300 mil at the box office every time.
It's like the pop star of movies. You know what I mean? It's like Gaga's like, I'm just making bangers that sell. You know what I mean? I feel like Cruise is like, I'm making movies for everybody to go see. And I think he did like one stunt himself because he is old school and is like tired of that fucking digital shit like me. He does it and everyone gives him like, and then all of a sudden it becomes its own marketing thing around the movie that he held on to.
Absolutely. And he can never quit. It became a thing and now he can go out. He could do press around it every time and it has to get bigger. But, oh, I'm going to leap off the top of Burj Khalifa this time. I want to talk about Tom Cruise all day, but we must, by the rules of our own show, talk about this. Speaking of action movies that weave a tale, we're talking about the song Brandy, parentheses, You're a Fine Girl,
Fine Girl,
the one hit wonder Looking Glass. This is it. This is their one hit. Andrew, can you just lay the groundwork for us? Just give us some facts about this song, Andrew.
I will say the Looking Glass fans of the world, Evan, would challenge you that they're a one hit wonder.
What?
They had a second hit. But it was a minor hit. Very small hit.
Didn't stand the test of time.
Did not stand the test of time. As far as I know, has not been placed in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. We'll find out when Guardians of the Galaxy 3 comes out.
Okay.
But like that's a huge reason that this song has had such a resurgence and such a success, is that it's like not just on the soundtrack for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but is like kind of part of the plot of Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
It's like that whole...
That's one of my least favorites. I watched it only once, but I remember, like, I know needle drops are like a part of the Guardians of the Galaxy story, but it feels kind of like abused into, if I remember.
Yeah, the song is like about, you know, a sailor who's in love with someone and is far away. And in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it's like the whole Kurt Russell villain is the sailor, quote unquote, the cosmic sailor who's far away from his love interest on Earth.
Who is Chris Pratt's mom.
Yes, who's Chris Pratt's mom.
So the song Brandy becomes an analogy for the whole relationship between Chris Pratt, Star-Lord, and his estranged dad.
And then
dad.
I literally cannot remember the entire plot of the rest of the movie, except that Kurt Russell is a bad guy.
I remember Kurt Russell because I'm just always excited to see Mr. Russell.
Yeah, it's like they try to make it a twist, but it's like anytime there's any like huge actor in a Marvel movie that hasn't been in a Marvel movie before, you just immediately know he's the villain. It's like
It's like Law and Order rules. It's like, oh, okay, Vincent. Like, oh, it's Stephen Colbert is in the cold open doing something. It's like, it looks like he's innocent. Moving on. It's like, I doubt Colbert showed up to play the Forger. Yeah.
There's no question how Act 3 of this thing wraps up.
Yeah, Robert Redford walks into the Captain America movie and is like, I'm a guy who's a really nice bureaucrat, and you're like,
you'll catch me playing the exposition guy in multiple episodes. No? Oh, I'm an actual bad guy. Yeah, of course, that makes sense. Yeah.
So the song is a huge hit in 1972, which, crazy year for music. It's on the year-end chart, like in like the low teens, I think 12. But Lean on Me is that year. American Pie is that year. Roberta Flack, the first time ever I saw your face, and the Nilsson song, Harry Nilsson, I can't live if living is without you.
From famous by Rules of Attraction.
So that's like a gentleman's 12, like in like a normal year, like maybe you're cracking the top 10 into the year chart. This is a huge hit for them. They have that one other hit, Jimmy Loves Marianne, but within 2 years the band is falling apart. You know, they got together young in college. They have their hits.
Jersey band, right?
Their Jersey band,
Jersey Shore sound, allegedly.
Yes.
The fuck that means.
I saw that written up too, and someone please tell me, what is the Jersey Shore sound?
Oh man, I went to the Wikipedia early 70s.
What does that mean?
Article.
It's Frankie Valli, the Four Seasons.
I went to the Wikipedia article, and like every paragraph ended with citation needed.
Citation. Yeah.
I was like, this is made up. The Jersey Shore sound is made up. It's not even Frankie Valli. It's like,
does Springsteen
is the bands a generation later who were like influenced by Frankie Valli, but are including like more rock and blues. Springsteen allegedly counts, but have you ever heard Bruce Springsteen say like, yes, As a member of the Jersey Shore sound, like no,
I thought of him because he has all those big live concerts like at Asbury
Factory.
Park.
He wants to be like too blue collar to go to the Jersey Shore.
100%, he would just be like, we're a rock and roll band.
And we should say now that the true Jersey Shore sound is being carried on by DJ Paulie G, or Paulie D. I forget.
Yeah, DJ Paulie D has taken the torch. For sure.
Yes, thank you, DJ.
But
Paul.
These are true Jersey guys. They meet at Rutgers, which I did not realize until I was living in the tri-state area is like the state university.
That's
of
the
New
University
Jersey.
Of New
it's
Jersey.
It's like the University of New Jersey. If you're not familiar with New Jersey, yeah. And are you from New Jersey, John?
I'm from Long Island, which is, as we like to say, same shit, different toilet. So I'm familiar with New Jersey, but we still like rapidly avoid each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a rivalry born of being too similar, for sure.
Yeah.
It's like
I'm opened up to the Jersey Shore Sound wiki. Here are some of the major artists they describe. Okay. Bruce Springsteen, Southside Johnny and the Asbury Juice.
Oh, that's a list that falls off hard after number one.
Second up is Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. Looking Glass.
Looking Glass is below Southside Johnny?
In this order, yeah, I guess
oh,
so.
Come on.
Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. Which, is that Stevie
That's Stevie Van Zandt's band that's just like basically his like self-described vanity project from like the last 15 or 20 years.
He's
like,
just the guy from Springsteen.
Like if there was a truly a Jersey Shore sound
to like have him underneath the spring, like it's like yeah, of course. And then the Gaslight Anthem, which I think is a little newer, right? That's it, like they're like my high school, college.
They're like a recent point. I mean, if there was a true Jersey Shore sound, it would be happening at the same time. And they're just listing bands that have a relationship to the geographic entity that is the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like the Gaslight Anthem, a New Brunswick, New Jersey rock band that encompasses punk rock, blues, soul, and Americana, as well as Jersey Shore. They achieved the best album of 2008 from punknews.org. It's like, that is not how are they the same sound as Bruce Springsteen? Like and Looking Glass. How
this
do you put them
no
all
connection.
In the same category? It's like, this is geographically that makes sense, but not everyone from the same town. Like Billy Joel and fucking Eddie Money sound pretty different, even though they're both Long Island legend.
Yeah, this is made up, and I'm confident that if you went to the IP address that is editing this Wikipedia article, it would be wherever WFMU is in New Jersey. There's just a WFMU DJ who's like
it's
trying
to
invent
Tom Sharpling.
The Jersey Shore.
Yes, it's Sharpling just trying to make Jersey Shore happen.
So they break up pretty quickly after their second album. Elliot Lurie, who's the lead singer, he's the songwriter, he goes solo and has a album that does not do very well. I was listening to some of the songs off it.
Okay.
And I saw one of the, like, it was kind of heartwarming, kind of sad to me. Realize that all these comments on the video, you know, I'm a YouTuber, so I have to go look at the YouTube comments so I can see. I was telling Evan
what you need to change about yourself, your personality, or your looks, or anything like that.
Well, I was telling him that on all these older songs, guaranteed within the first two or three comments, there's a comment that's like, my wife has been dead for 10 years. We listen to this song every night. It's like 100% of songs from the 70s, 80s have that comment. But this one, I realized that people were like, were saying like, thank you for what you do. Like, I know people don't remember this song, but this meant everything to me. And I really realized it was on Elliot Lurie's personal YouTube channel. He's posting his songs from 1975 from this disco album he put out. And he's responding to them. And like, his comments are just like, everybody forgot this record. Thank you. It's like, man, this is the guy who wrote the number 12 hit. But he ended up moving to L.A. He became like a music director in the movies. I feel confident he's the only person in the world who worked on both Alien 3 and Spanglish. And the rest of the band became like, basic, like weirdly, they like changed a couple members and became a hair metal band that wasn't like a proto hair metal band that presaged like a lot of the 80s New Jersey rock. You know, the Jersey Shore sound of Bon Jovi. The Jersey Shore sound of Motley Crue and Twisted Sister. You know, very influenced by Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. But they changed their name to Stars, and Stars with a Z was like not a big band, but supposedly influential on Bon Jovi. When do you think the first time you heard this song was, Evan? Do you think it was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
No, absolutely not. This is a staple on like oldies radio, so I definitely would have heard this, you know, in the 90s, 2000s. The hits of the 70s, 80s, and today, you would hear this coming on.
What made you
WCBS
pluck it?
WCBS FM 101.1. We play your favorite oldies.
Yeah, with Q99, this comes on.
John, what made you pluck it off of our list of fan suggestions?
This is a song for me that I rarely can place when I first learned about a song, but this was one of the few that I remember hearing about. My college girlfriend, who I now am married to, she was always like, she would be singing this song, or like if someone said Brandy, which the word Brandy was said a fair amount in the early 2000s.
Inevitably comes up.
And if someone said Brandy, she would be like, you're a fine girl. And like, I would always be like, oh, I don't know that song. She's like, you don't know that song? And it sounded like, we didn't know who Looking Glass was, but she was like, I think it's like the Beach Boys or something. Like, we didn't really. And then we eventually.
Honest mistake.
This is 2003 or 2002, so we don't have like YouTube to just look it up, but we do have Kazaa and LimeWire and Napster. So you download it and you get a few different versions that aren't the right one. But then when I got this song, it hit me in a very specific way. First of all, there's something about when you're like in your 20s and you find a song where you know you can hear and understand every lyric. Like that is like something special. There's so much in the 90s and 2000s where the lyrics were not clear. And as a kid, you're just like, you know, you're just like playing along. This is like, they're so over enunciated. And it's because later on in life, now that I'm a 40-year-old, I'd realize I really love storytelling songs. I love a song that tells like a kind of narrative, especially of like an epic level. And one of my favorite songs of all time is Down Easter Alexa, which is also
By the Bruce Springsteen of Long Island, Billy Joel.
Hell yeah. Yeah. You know, Bruce is the Billy of Jersey, however you want to phrase it. Same shit, different toilet, brother.
Touché, New Brunswick.
Take that, New Jersey Shore sound. Give me the South Shore of Long Island sound. Eddie Money, Dee Snider, Billy Joel, and I'm running out. Although thousands of 90s hardcore bands came out of Long Island. A lot of like Glassjaw and Movie Life and all those bands came out of Long Island. But all that being said, this song hit in a way, and then it's like a... I find myself really liking yacht rock. I don't know if this is fully considered yacht rock, but I feel like if it played on a yacht rock station, you wouldn't change the...
You wouldn't blink. It's yacht rock adjacent.
Oh, you couldn't... Yeah. You couldn't be more yacht rock about this because it's about yachts. It's about
right, that's
people
the thing. It's
in
got a boat in it, so it's it could be misleading. It could falsely put it in the category, but in my mind, it did. And it's groovy, like, and not in like the trippy hippie way. I mean, like, it's a groove. It's very groovalicious.
Absolutely. It's not psychedelic groove. It's not a jam bandy wandering around type vibe. It's just in the pocket, gets you bopping.
Could, Could you just like drink a giant fucking vodka cran while this song is playing? Like if you're just at the beach or poolside and this song is blasting, I bet you could finish a fucking jug of vodka cran before the song.
I will say it's
inspiring in that way.
Oh hell yeah, I would drop a rum floater on top of my pool bar Mai Tai 100% of the time.
And only
dark
now.
Rum floater from, you know, pay $26 at the fucking swim up bar. Room charge it because you don't have your card on you, and you know, just deal with it when you check out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. By the second chorus, I'm ordering the ceviche.
Only now have I realized. I mean, I've lived in New York City, which abuts Long Island. I mean, Brooklyn.
Sure.
I did not realize this until I moved to New York City. Brooklyn is on Long Island. Mm-hmm. It's not in Long Island. That's a distinction that perhaps only a New Yorker will understand.
Yes.
Brooklyn is on the same island, but it's not in it.
On the island.
Yes. Yeah. But if you go out to Long Island, there is a very, maybe more of a maritime flavor than those of you who have not been to Long Island understand. There's a very like coastal grandma aesthetic.
Yeah, people forget because the export of Long Island culture seems to be like, like racist middle class cops and lacrosse players and Guidos like that and women who drive white BMWs and white SUVs.
Yeah, those are the mascots.
Those are like those are what exports. But when you go to Long Island, there is a swath. It is a northeastern beach, like, you know, it's got that vibe of like an Atlantic beach town, the tri-state area. It's not Cape Cod in its demeanor. But when you go down to the shore, you go out to Montauk, you go to Robert Moses. It's all gorgeous beaches with like a beach vibe. And there's tons of my parents and where I grew up was a town called Freeport, and we have a marina in Freeport called the Woodcliff Canal, which is like where all these seaside restaurants are and everyone parks their boats. It's where we go out to go fishing from there. So that's just not a part of Long Island culture that seems to like get out.
People don't understand that it's like a key. I find it to be a very Key Westy vibe. I've spent a lot of time in Key West. It's like, and you meet a lot of people on Long Island who are like, well, of course, during the winter I'm in Key West. It's like island to island. Who are like, oh, are you going to spend your winter in Hawaii or Key West? And are just like, they're looking for a place, the kind of town where you live a block from the beach, yet you have a huge pool in your backyard.
Right.
And that's the kind of place that a lot of Long Island
is. Love it. Well, yeah, and Long Island just like, it hits in that way. So with this song, like, I feel like a weird, like, ancestral spiritual connection to this song, because the line what's the final line of the chorus, but my life, my lover, my lady is the sea.
Yes.
that really hits for me, for a guy who has Long Island tattooed on his
there it is.
Oh, for those of you following along at home, Gabriel flexed a Long Island tat on his bicep.
Go over to Google Maps, look up Long Island. It looks like a fish, but he doesn't
have...
Yeah,
it's like a fish or an alligator or some shit.
Kind of looks like a fish with a split tail, and Gabriel just has that tattooed on his bicep. Flex. Come on, flex for us. Oh, there it is.
Me and both my brothers got this together. The three.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Gabrus brothers. We kind of do like parody music and stuff like that. You guys should check us out.
Sure.
We're like right below you guys in Spotify.
You
GA,
guys,
actually, GA, we're ahead of you. Sorry.
The Gabrus brothers are rocketing up the list of Long Island exports. That's the thing, is if a Long Islander leaves the island, they can't bring all that nautical aesthetic and, you know, the life preservers and stuff with them. All they can bring with them as export is just the loud yelling and stuff and bad manners. So that's the famous bit.
I'm doing my part here as a West Coast representation of Long Island by being fully a beach bum at 40 years old. Like, I'm keeping the beach bum aesthetic alive. I'm like a parrot head who doesn't listen to Jimmy Buffett. You know what I mean?
I salute you.
I don't really like Buffett's music, but I like the vibes. It's kind of... This is actually weirdly true about me. I don't really love Fish or Grateful Dead either, but I love the vibes. Like, I love hanging out with people. And the same goes for Buffett. I'm like, Like, that's my vibe completely, but just the music and the other people stress me out.
This is provable in the canon of this show since you brought Kokomo last time. You're only doing beach and sailing songs.
I mean, yeah, really, by accident, I guess.
And I respect it. I salute you with an ay-ay-ay-yo.
Jimmy Buffett kind of fell backwards into doing the beach stuff. He had albums before his beach stuff hit that weren't beach albums. Like, it kind of makes you wish that Looking Glass had just had this one hit and just been like, our next album is all nautical anthems.
Yeah, just sea shanties.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
It's all about different pool bartenders that I'm falling in love with. Beachside bartenders that everyone in town is in love with. That's like such a funny, like, the song is such a funny, because it's ostensibly about a woman who's just trying to work her shift and who's being harassed by every single person that works there.
Yes, exactly.
That hangs out there. Hey, but what a wife you would be, huh, sweetheart? And she's like, knock it off, Charlie. And she like goes and marries the rums or slices the limes or whatever.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly just workplace harassment, but she has to accept it because she's working for tips. I'll see you next week, John. Okay, well, where are you going out this week? Tacoma? Well, okay.
And all she could think about is the one man. And this is the thing. All the guys hanging out at Brandy's bar know that she did fall in love with a customer one time.
Yeah, and so it could happen for them.
Yeah, and so she's like, they're still like, well, maybe I'm the next guy, but they don't realize how swept up she is in this mysterious stranger who's been gone for a while.
Well, here's my question about the mysterious stranger.
Okay.
Does the mysterious stranger exist, or is the mysterious stranger like the equivalent of Brandy wearing a fake wedding ring on her ship?
Right, I was going to say, is that her? My boyfriend is picking me up tonight.
Sure. Right, usually you talk about the Canadian boyfriend as like a 13-year-old, you know,
going to camp.
Yeah, middle schooler from South Carolina proving that they had their first kiss at camp.
Yeah.
But maybe for Brandy, she's just sort of like, how do I get all these guys to lay off me? This sucks.
It's so funny. Like, that is so misogynistic. It's so unfortunate that the only way a woman, Brandy, this hypothetical, the only way this woman could feel safe from the advances of other men is to say she's already taken by another man. Like, just a no is not enough. The only way these guys respect her boundaries is if they're like, well, she's already, a dude's already claimed her. So that takes paramount to us, the sketchy bar crew here who's waiting for our whiskey.
And if that is the case, imagine, you know, the investment she had to make with the silver braided chain.
I know.
Brandy's having to lay out like at least 100, 150 bucks for a silver braided chain with...
It's made from the fine. Isn't it made from the finest silver of North Spain, right?
Let me start playing this song. Let me get through at least the first verse so we can get into this tale. Andrew's laid out a crucial question that I think we need to answer, which is, are we getting this from a reliable narrator or an unreliable narrator that she's invented this guy? We want to get to the bottom of this.
And then, does it even matter?
And then, exactly right. Sick pocket. I love this groove.
Oh, wow. There's a
port. Ooh.
On a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day.
Okay, busy port.
Sailors pass the time away and talk about their home.
Sure, just sailor stuff.
And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down.
Yep.
They say, Brandy, fetch another round. She serves them whiskey and wine.
Okay, I'm just going to pause it. Let's just recap. What do we know so far?
First of all, we know the song rules. And we like it, so it makes sense to me.
That fucking little
riff.
That little riff.
The vocal doo-doot. What could be better than doo-doot?
I mean, it's so good that John thought it was the Beach Boys. Like, there's no higher compliment for harmonies than like, that does kind of sound like the Beach Boys. They're so locked in. It's this super fun syncopated lick that all the other guys in the band are singing. If you watch a live video, it's not Elliot Lurie doing. Like, they sound great. And then you have that, like, this amazingly simple but locked in bass part. Bass player sounds great.
Yeah, they're in the pocket, like you're dancing immediately. And then this, I don't know what I would expect if I was hearing this for the first time, but I think I would expect like a more rockin' belty thing to come in. But this sultry crooner, this dude comes in, there's a part just like wants to take me to bed with this sea shanty.
The fact that he says whiskey and wine and his voice is giving me the sensation of whiskey and wine, like the kind of like buzzed, tired energy, like it feels very weirdly symbolic. And going back to what you said, that opening riff, once you have heard this song, there are of course, a number of songs. You guys are even more musically informed than the average person, but there are a number of songs that when you just hear the opening lick, you know exactly what the song, you know what I mean? Yes. Like, this is one of those songs you're like, well, you don't have to go like, wait, is this? You're like, nope, this is Brandy, You're a Fine Girl. Like, at the second, you're like, you are just sliding into the fucking song, you know? You don't have to wait for 40 seconds to be like, wait, which one is the, is this the, nope, it's immediate. Like, it's Brandy. She's named for a liquor. She's serving whiskey. She's serving wine. She lives here at this fucking port town.
She's named after booze.
But it is really strange that, like, when you think of the song, you think of the lick, you think of pouring the dark rum floater on your Mai Tai.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you think about the lyric, you're like, ah, yes, that song about a woman who will never be with the man she loves and is constantly being hit on by her customers.
Yeah, there is something funny about that juxtaposition or the misalignment of like a song that has a smooth groove, but when it's like, I think this song is about a miscarriage. You know, it's like you're kind of like groove into it, and you're like, wait, what was that part that she just said? Like, you know, like that. There's that. The sound is so smooth for a song that's about unrequited, like, you know, lost love.
Yeah.
Like, potentially a love who drowned at sea.
Yeah. I heard the radio the other day. I heard Saving All My Love For You, Whitney Houston song that seems like it's just the most pure love ballad ever, right? And then you listen to the verses and you're like, this is about the other woman who is having an affair with a married man and can never have him. And it's really dark.
Yeah. She's just like literally.
And you're just like, you just remember being like a 16-year-old kid, like singing it at a party. Yes. You're like not registering what any of the lyrics are about.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. There is one small pet peeve I have with these first two verses, even as they're laying out this beautiful narrative of Brandy's life. This is just like, annoys me from a songwriting perspective. I don't know why it bothers me so much. But it drives me so crazy that the fourth line of every stanza does not rhyme. Bay, day, away, homes. What could be easier to rhyme with than way? There's a rhyme out there for you, Elliot Lurie. Mm. You know,
yeah.
Town, down, round, wine. There's like some word out there that would rhyme there, and I don't know like generally where our punch up is going to go, but I want to guarantee you, John. I want to guarantee our listeners. I guess I can't guarantee you because Evan might disagree with me on this. Our version is going to rhyme all four lines.
Oh wow!
Just rhyming all four lines is going to punch the song up.
It's okay. Obviously a choice by them too, because that all the other verses stanzas follow that. They all follow. Like,
and we know they're capable of rhyming because they did town down round.
Yeah,
we know the rhymes are possible, but these guys are poets. These guys are poets. They left that dangling syllable there so that it sticks in your ear a little bit. I can't believe you made an early pledge on this punch up.
I mean,
it was a cultural reset.
Yeah, I can imagine Elliot Lurie like arguing that it's like, what's the counterpoint? The counterpoint is like, oh, it puts you off kilter, just like Brandy's life is. I just wanted to rhyme.
Well, the whole verse is leading up to the sailors
up to the greatest compliment you can give a bartendress.
You're fine. The first chorus
fine girl
is just this is where they finally hit on her.
She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, Brandy, you're a fine girl.
You're a fine girl.
What a good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea.
Wow. Golly.
What a good wife you would be.
And that's just such an old school pickup, like line of like, let's just jump to the conclusion here. Not a good lay, not a I can treat you right, I can make you happy in any way. It's like, you would be a good wife. And it's like, what has she demonstrated besides being fine that would make her a good wife?
Yeah, your eyes would steal. Your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea. Like, that's their requirement. Is it's like you have pretty face.
They're like,
you have pretty face. I would like to make you my wife.
I always wanted a wife who would fetch me things.
Do you imagine that the hypothetical guy she's referring to, whether we know he's real or not, like you have one image of him as a sailor in your head, and then you have like a different image of the guys who are saying you're a fine girl, right?
Yeah.
Even though the Looking Glass voice is fine girl, I picture they're like, you know, like got anchor tattoos and like they're like, you know, like looking like Popeye motherfuckers. But the guy that she is imagining is like a swashbuckling captain with like gray on his temples and like salt kissed beard and hair, and like, you know, he just looks magnificent. Or
I am picturing, whenever I hear this song and envision this bar, I am picturing the ride at Disney World, Pirates of the Caribbean, just grizzled, homeless-looking guys that are just chasing wenches around in a circle, in an animatronic circle that never ends. They look
like scurvy-ridden freaks who are showing up to get their dose of vitamin C and to tug off thinking of poor Brandy.
Exactly right. That's exactly it. And this gets to a dispute that Andrew and I
right. The
have.
Drinks are medicine for them because they need the vitamin C out of the lime.
Yeah, they need
like,
the lime.
They're like, the rum is a bonus, but I need the lime.
Because water is dangerous.
So, you're imagining this as like as a pirate situation.
That's, well, at least the aesthetic. But these guys have teeth falling out. They're banging on the bar with their mugs. See,
for me,
screaming for rum.
I had not heard it that way. I was 100% imagining this set fully in 1972 in just like Monterey, like outside of San Francisco. It's like
contemporary to the release of the song.
Guys working on container ships or something, or pleasure yachts.
Okay. Oh, I'm picturing a little bit, not fully where, like I'm landing somewhere in between you guys. It's not fully pirates, but it is like, it's a little romanticized, fantastical era of like shipmanship.
Whaling.
Like some Call Me Ishmael type Moby Dick stuff?
Yeah, like some stuff where a sailor is like a romantic job. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it really has that vibe anymore. And maybe even by the 70s, kind of like container ships aren't that. I feel like there's an element of like sexy exploration or like, you know, there's some romanticized version of sailors here.
Yeah,
but it does make sense that there are port bars in the 70s. Like, it totally makes sense too, unfortunately. But now they're all like they all work for like the Merck Industries or whatever. Like, that's like less fun, you know?
Yes,
Maersk,
like,
or whatever that name
is. Yeah, now they're, Maersk. They're just doing Captain Phillips, I'm the captain now type runs on container ships.
Right. Yeah, I'm not saying my version is right. I have no proof that this is set in Monterey 1972 or on the Jersey Shore, perhaps.
Well, it may not be proof, but I did excavate what could be said as damning evidence that my theory, or maybe at least John's middle ground, is the correct Looking Glass canon aesthetic, which is that I found the so-called official video for the song, which did not exist in 1972, was released last year.
Whoa.
Somehow,
official video was released last year.
Somehow Looking Glass decided, you know what? This song has 40 years worth of legs because of Guardians of the Galaxy. What if we just put out a video now in 2020?
They should have just cut the video like Seal's Kiss from a Rose is all just
intercut,
like,
with the movie.
Is all just stuff from Batman with Jim Carrey.
Like, that makes sense that it's like, shit, we're still pretty popular. We should make a music video. Someone's like grandson, you know, one of their aging sons or grandsons were like, yo, you guys need to be on YouTube. And they were like, huh? And it's like, look, I can help you. I know an animation guy who can. And it's like a Flash animation music video. And it's kind of in the style, like, it is very much like drinking ale and playing squeeze box level of like
yeah. So just describing, I'm just going to describe for our listeners this animated video that is called the official music video on Looking Glass.
Very like paper
channel.
Cutout collage-y. We were talking about 60 versus 24 FPS earlier. This is maybe pushing 12 FPS.
Mm-hmm. Hand-drawn animation, and it very quickly goes to like an 1800s port. Guys clinking glasses of ale. All of the ships have giant masts with cloth sails.
Brandy does appear to be wearing
a
bonnet.
Yeah, they're all galleons, if you will.
Galleons, for sure. Yeah, there's an armada parked in the port here. Brandy is dressed like a German beer wench at Oktoberfest.
Yeah, I this is maybe this is controversial to say. I mean, there's 40 years between the release of the song and this video. So even though it's released by the band, I feel like it's a little bit of a retcon, a little bit of a
it's hard to argue that this was there.
I don't know if it's truly canon.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue
that they chose this in 1972 and are like, well, I think we should really demonstrate what, like, this could be, like you're saying, like retconning. And certainly easier to animate than, like, shipping containers and steamships and stuff.
I will note that the silver chain is even gold. If they couldn't get the silver chain right and have it be silver.
You're saying that disqualifies the entire video.
Well, I'm hearing you.
Absolutely savage.
I'm hearing you that at least 40 years later, Looking Glass, there's no proof in the song either that this is 1972 Monterey with a bunch of laid-back hippies who love just drinking on the beach at a beach bar. I'm leaning towards accepting that you guys are right, and this is a historical, a historical narrative, which makes it even weirder to me that it's such a hit. I think you guys are right, but it's just even weirder to me that they were like, let's write a song about 1800 shipping.
We haven't really talked about that, but it's like this song is such an outlier that it's not just like a love song about going to the sock hop or whatever it was going to be a hit in the 50s and 60s. Right. It's this weird period piece where they're weaving a tale, telling this story that doesn't seem to be set in the present day. But what works about it? The backup vocals that totally bop. Like, everyone loves "You're a Fine Girl."
You were talking about getting into narrative songs, John. Have you gotten into country music?
No, that still doesn't work on me, unfortunately.
A bridge too far, yeah.
Like,
culturally, it's a bridge too far.
Yeah, it's a little too... It's not the sound I love. Like, I feel like this isn't fully narrative songs, but like people like the Decemberists and Neutral Milk Hotel, they kind of like scratch that itch a little bit more for me. Yeah. But I do love like Princes of the Universe is like one of my favorite. Like Queen was like maybe my first favorite band as a young person. Yeah. So they kind of really inspired my like Bohemian Rhapsody from Wayne's World and kicked me off into like becoming a Queen fan. And those songs, like, they have that epic feel to. You know what? That's what's missing from the country songs in my book is that they don't feel epic. They feel a little small.
Yes,
and not in a bad way. They're telling a personal story, but doesn't have the sweeping
but
energy.
But that's
that,
like,
I feel like this song is telling, it's like, this is something you tell around the campfire is the tale of Brandy.
Yeah.
It's like, the story is quite small, but it feels epic because of the size of the music.
Yes, right. It's the sound behind it, too.
But it's hard to imagine a narrative. Like, a lot of country music is narrative still, but it's hard for me to imagine a pop song being this narrative and being such a hit in 2022.
You might be right.
We didn't even get to the main love interest yet. We've set up in verse one and chorus one, which is different than the subsequent choruses, something I think is kind of cool. We just set up the environment of workplace harassment. That's all we've got so far. So let me play into verse two where we actually meet the love interest.
Brandy wears a braided chain made of finest silver from the north of Spain. A locket that bears the name of a man that Brandy loves.
It's probably Reggie.
He came on a summer's day bringing gifts.
There's those Jersey Shore horns. Away,
but it made it clear he couldn't stay. No harbor was his home.
Oh, man. They didn't need to bring in those horns, but they did. Oh, they did. They could have got away with just jamming on another verse, and here comes the horn section just lifting it. Absolutely savage. Okay, what did we learn about this dude?
Is he made up? Is this just a, because you were asking, Evan, is the narrator unreliable? And this is like, this is a weird place that my brain went.
That's different than Brandy being unreliable.
Right, exactly. Like, in 2019 and 2018, people would always talk about, like, people would get mad about, like, headlines not saying that like, Trump lied. And it's like, well, like, to know if someone lied, you have to know their inner thoughts almost. Like, they said right, something that was incorrect.
Like, if he might not have thought it was a lie at any point. He's not actively choosing to make a lie.
Right. If someone lies to me and I believe them and then I repeat it, I don't think I lied.
Mm.
Right? Mm. So I feel like this narrator could be... This narrator is getting his information secondhand. Brandy's telling him all this stuff. He could have avidly believed it, the naive that he is.
Well, you're writing this guy as a character. Who do you think the narrator is?
I guess he could be an omniscient narrator. I guess I thought he was a guy at the bar.
You think it's a jilted sailor.
But yeah, maybe you're
right. I think it's another guy that's hot for Brandy.
I don't know if he's a jilted sailor, but I'll go a little further. I think he's a sailor who is more of like a poet observational guy who's like, you know, he's like tagging along on some boat and he's like, I'm going to write a gorgeous, you know, Iliad. I'm going to write a fucking big story about, you know, this is my great American novel, great Jersey Shore novel. And he's watching all this. So I don't know if he's reliable. I feel like he's getting his info from Brandy.
Yeah, and that theory holds up because we know he's a poet.
The legends of the sailors sitting around, like the way they talk about Brandy and the story too. Like it feels like maybe a bar story that this guy's writing down.
Right, all these sailors,
so a few different narrators.
Yeah, it is I, great pop songwriter Herman Melville, watching in the bar.
As my shipmates discuss when we will land again in 1820s Newark, our favorite port.
Maybe it's because I just recently watched Master and Commander that I have it in my head that someone's like scribbling notes about this or something like that.
This is definitely set in the same world.
Yeah, the song. I would say the narrator is either omniscient, like you said, or has spoken to both the sailors that hang out at the bar and Brandy. They seem to know enough info and like both perspectives in a way, right? Like he seems to know how Brandy feels, and he knows how these other people feel. Like he dug in. He did his research.
Yeah, he's a reporter. Did some interviews.
Like any good vaccine person in 2022, he's doing his own research.
Yeah. Well, in the second chorus, we hear from the lover, the boyfriend. The first time we heard from the sailors at large, the second chorus is adjusted, so it's supposed to be in the voice of the boyfriend. Okay, get in the bridge there, but wow. He had the same pickup line, like, what a good wife you would be.
Man, talk about unreliable narrators, though. Like, I would stay, but the sea. This seems like, I don't know, that guy seems like kind of a scumbag, too, to me.
So you don't take it at face value. I mean, I have to be honest, I'm kind of on the same page. I think Looking Glass's intent definitely is you take this at face value. Yes, this man really loves the ocean. He thinks Brandy's great and make a perfect wife, but he's just super into sailing.
I love you so much, but I have to sail for work.
I can't buy it. I can't buy it. This guy has a Brandy in every port. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, he's a phony. Yeah, and like that makes sense too because he's probably got a dozen lockets made from Spanish silver, right?
Brandy
from the north of Spain.
Oh hell yeah! If he went to the north of Spain,
scooped a few.
They have a flea market down there, you know, that serves all the cruise ships, and he could have picked up 100 of these for $1 a piece.
Brandy, you're better than this guy. Please call us. What a good wife you would be. That's how the guys at the bar all got themselves to this point is just through utter jealousy and disbelief at this guy with the braided chains. Next thing you know, you're telling Brandy what a good wife she would be.
I mean, he had something going for him that she bought this story. I mean, this is like the oldest trick in the book. Like, how do you fall for this guy saying, like, sorry, I can't settle down? Well, I think we're about to find out what exactly he had going for him. Yeah, I'm going to roll it. Let me roll it back here. And that sound you just made implies it was penis length, but we'll see. I'm going to roll it back here. We'll play the bridge.
She could feel the ocean fall and rise.
Uh-oh.
She saw its glory.
It got horny.
He had always told the truth, but it was an honest man. Ooh. And Brandy does her best to understand it.
All right. At this point, the narrator's just putting it right in our face. He was an honest man. Just told us.
Well, the next verse kind of undoes a lot of our arguments here, plays in like is important evidence added. I feel like,
yeah, in this trial,
we learn who the trial is, the original sayer. Yeah, in this trial, it is blockbuster evidence. It will crack the case wide open.
Man,
as we put Brandy's boyfriend on trial here. I don't want to blow by the fact that the bridge did manage to get a little horny, though.
Yes, I want to talk about that. She could feel the ocean fall and rise. Come on, she ain't talking about.
Come on,
dog.
We're not just talking about his storytelling. He told his sailor stories, and she could feel the ocean falling and rising, and saw its rage and glory.
What other word do you use raging to modify besides erection?
Like, right? That's it.
Raging
that's
is
it.
Not
that's
a word.
One of those words. It used to be used for other things, but it's just one of those words that got tainted by sex stuff. It got used for boners, and now you can't use it elsewhere. Now raging is only for boners.
Sorry, linguists, but deal with it.
Yeah, sorry, Scorsese. It's not your bull anymore. I want to roll it back for like one bar and play this last, the doo-doo-doot bit, which is... Actually the most important part of Brandy, no matter how much we talk about the lyrics, we'll never get past
we've
it, the
been
fact
arguing
that,
for like 45 minutes about like who's the narrator, like are they omniscient, like are they reliable, and really just like what matters most in the song is just the doo-doo-doots.
What makes
yeah, whoever's saying the doo-doo-doots, they've got my attention. I trust them the most, because that they're singing to my fucking heart. Yeah.
Yes. They sing right to the core of my soul every time I hear those doo-doots. And I just want to call out that for some reason they did the doo-doots different at the end of the bridge, and it completely slaps. They changed the syncopation on it. I guess it's sort of like emotional peak. Brandy does her best to understand.
When the bars close down, Brandy walks through a silent town and loves a man who's not around.
And here it is.
This is what you're calling out.
Him say, she hears him say, Brandy, gonna find her.
Belt it out. He's ad-libbing. And that's it. Then we get a fade out. Oh, I love it so hard. I applaud it. It's a freaking perfect song, man. It just sounds so good. Now, John, what are you pointing to here in this last verse? She can still hear him say?
Yeah, hear me out. She can still hear him say. So earlier on, the sailors say, Brandy, you're a fine girl. What a good wife you will be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor from the sea. Then the chorus changes to, but my life, my lover, my lady is the sea. And it's attributed to the sailors in the second chorus. But in the third chorus, this final chorus, she hears him, the guy, the original captain who gave her the fucking, I'm assuming he's a captain, Brandy's got fucking, you know, class. The guy gave her the Spanish silver. She hears him say, so that's his line. It's, we're finally, it's getting attributed to him now. And then him saying, yes, my life, yes, my lover, my lady is the sea, is meaning like, Brandy, look, you're a fine girl and what a wonderful wife you will be. But honestly, I'm married to this other bitch, the ocean. And
the, like, ocean.
That's the first time we realized it's not the sailor. In the bridge,
he even told stories about the ocean falling and rising, implying to me that he's actually having physical sex with the sea.
Oh yeah,
I think,
sure.
I
he's standing open asshole over the wave, hoping like some water hits the G spot for sure.
Getting completely.
I mean, there's
blasted.
Other ways you can have sex with the ocean, but that's just my guess how I would do it.
It's like you said earlier, though, John. It's like all the guys in the bar who are saying this, like who are hitting on Brandy. They all know it worked once, as she's right. telling them about this Spanish sailor or this sailor from a faraway land who at least visited Spain.
And you're right. It's only in this final chorus that you can see it's directly attributed to Brandy's boyfriend. That's crucial evidence.
This whole looking glass is out of order.
Looking glass can't handle the truth.
I still feel like this guy is probably a dirtbag because the idea of the man being married to the sea is so far-fetched to me.
Oh, it sounds like such an excuse of like, I got to focus on my job. Like, that just feels like, it feels like there might be a number of wonderful women working at port bars who all have Spanish silver lockets with the guy's name in it. Also, bold gift, giving a gift with your own name in it.
Yeah, remember me, baby. But I do have to go to a conference down at Coronado.
And of course,
yes, Deborah's going to be there, but it's not a thing. It's just a work colleague. We have to present together.
What else do we need to know about this song? We've gone over it with a fine-tooth comb. What other theories do we have? I have one maybe minor beef, just narrative-wise. Brandy is just this kind of damsel in distress. She doesn't get to do anything. She's slinging whiskey and is just being absolutely abused every day by her clientele. Can't do a thing about it because she's working for tips. She's in this totally powerless position. Then her boyfriend gets to go off, sail the seas, go to the north of Spain and probably lots of other places. But that's the only place we hear about. She didn't get to go anyplace. She walks in a town that's so boring it's silent.
Woof. Yeah. It's like Brandy is a tragic figure in a way. It's a bummer.
Yeah. How can we make
there's no agency?
How can we make Brandy a little bit more of the protagonist and less of the person who unfortunate things are happening to? Only two things happen in this song. One, Brandy's hit on by people in her bar. Two, the man she loves leaves her at her bar. Can we make Brandy the protagonist? And also, can we just make more things happen? Can we make more than two things happen in the song?
You know what? Now that you're saying that, we're like, this is a storytelling song, and they really don't tell much of a story. It's like,
it's only a
couple of like, hey, this guy, I have an ex-boyfriend. He's gone. He's at the sea. Like, yeah. And these guys are all creeps going, you're a fangirl. Like, there's not a lot going on. You're right.
So we can lean into the story. We could lean into the setting and the time, you know, like the setting and the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, what is it? If we exposit a little more with the setting and the time, can we make the narrative stronger? And of course, the song's going to rhyme all the way through. Every line's going to rhyme.
I love it.
Not every single line.
I was about to say, you guys are laying out, you know, you're calling your shot in a kind of difficult way, almost like saying the name of your show is 101 Places. Like, you guys are pointing for the fucking stands, dude. Good luck.
Yeah, it's in the name of the show. This jam is going to get punched, for sure. 100% of the time.
Jam up.
Well, in that case, maybe we should just take our break now. Let's go off while we got the ideas fresh. We're going to go off and work on something here, and then we'll come back after a break with a punched-up song. Okay, we're back, and let me tell you what we did here. I think we got maybe even a little too excited about discovering what was Brandy's story. We don't know anything about Brandy from the original other than just her job description and her getting hit on constantly. It sounds exhausting, frankly. And so what we wanted to do that would definitely improve the song is give Brandy a little story of her own.
Yeah, maybe even a lot of story. She's the protagonist now. Spain is not really involved anymore. I don't want to spoil too much.
Mm-hmm.
But what a bummer. That was one of my favorite parts of the song with the reference to the country of Spain.
Just that, yeah. Yeah.
I'll try to still enjoy your version.
Yeah, it wasn't in there just because it rhymed with chain. But the one thing that we
could have been from Bangor, Maine.
One thing we kept coming back around to when we thought back to our conversation with John is our false understanding that this song was an epic. We kept being like, wow, this song's such an epic. It's an epic. And then when we got to the end of it, we were like, yeah, nothing.
Actually, nothing happened.
Nothing really happened. She served the guy some drinks. Then she walked through a quiet town. So
it's like about epic things like sailors and adventure and ports and stuff, but it's really like minuscule. It's like The Wire. You know what I mean? It's like more about the red tape around working there.
Yeah, so we wanted to go full adventure.
It's a workplace comedy.
Full epic. Full Brandy protagonist.
Here you go. Oh,
hell yeah. This is exciting.
Right back in that pocket.
Brandy's the girl in the song. She's different.
There's a lass in a harbor town, been an orphan since her parents' ship went down.
Hell yeah, back story.
Tomboy. Never owned a gown, a simple barmaid fetching rounds.
All right.
But this picture
of yeah.
provincial port is about to be entirely destroyed. Army of monsters, for legal reasons not called orcs, are searching for an heir of a dark lord. A scary wizard says, Brandy, we must fly, girl.
There's
the chosen one, you must be. Let's go fulfill the ancient prophecy.
Brandy
wears a braided chain made of finest silver.
Chain is still
from
in
the house of Gawain. Funny she never read the inscription that contains the prophecy she must attain. The chain is the one thing that she still has from her very, very normal human dad, who was definitely just some regular man and not the heir to the throne of Sklan. Her daddy said, Brandy, your bloodline, girl, is as normal as it be. But right now, just using your mind, set fire to that tree. They met a burly dwarf and a wily
You gotta put the party together.
Mismatched pair, but actually cool guys, helped her escape with a magic cloak.
They got magic.
Really bonded with a few more badass dudes who were working as hired guns. Till they realized Brandy was the chosen one.
Stuff and some old books and running.
Forward couple years, Brandy's the sorcerer queen. Kingdom safe, evil's gone to sleep.
She did.
Playful rogue on her arm as she walks the keep. But then the wizard's ghost appears. She hears him say, Brandy, one more time, girl. Sorry about these evil portents I bring. But your dad's been raised from the dead as a zombie king. Brandy, one more time, girl.
One more time,
the perfect
girl.
Thing for our legacy.
Sequel time,
we'll be running all this back in another trilogy.
Holy shit, gents. Holy shit, man.
We wove a tale.
That, you, there's no way you can know this, but this. I fucking love this song. It's new. Like, there's no way you could have known how much I love. I mean, I guess we sat down and I started talking about epic song. Like, this is like exactly what I want. This is like a fucking opening, like prologue to a fantasy novel that I love. Like, man, this hits so well. The specifics, I'm in. And Brandy has got agency. She's got magic powers. She's the protagonist now, not some fucking weirdo at sea.
She has some fun friends who aren't hitting on her.
Yeah, she's got a rogue and a dwarf, an unlikely duo. Like, that's a wonderful combo she's got there.
We were thinking about all of the fantasy epics that we've read where you're always on the run from, like, an army of bad guys that are modeled after Lord of the Rings orcs, but you can't, you know, really call them orcs. They're you know, Trollocs or something.
Yeah. Trollocs, now you're talking about the Robert Jordan series, The Wheel of Time.
Hell yeah.
Which I listen to every single book of over the pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
14 novels. I did the math. It's a total of 18 days of nonstop material.
That's a great pandemic journey to go on. You and some Trollocs. That's the model for Brandy now.
100%. It's just like you've got the kid in the small town, whether he's a hobbit or whether he's Randall Thor, mm-hmm. or whether he's the dumb kid from David Eddings' Belgariad, who, like, David Eddings literally was like, I should write a fantasy novel. Maybe I would make more money, you know? And they picked up by some cool-ass fighters, and then, like, within half a book, you're like, but you're the one?
You're
the one?
Mr. Anderson.
You're the dragon reborn? You're Kaladin, the wielder of the spear? You know, like...
You're actually Neo?
I read too many fantasy... You're Drizzt Do'Urden, the savior of Menzo Berenzin, the drow elf rogue that's going to the surface for the first time to become a companion of the hall?
Why not Brandy? Why not Brandy?
There's only one who can defeat the Matrix. It's Mr. Anderson.
This rolls, guys. Good fucking work, man. That got me excited.
Oh, thanks, man. And, you know, they just, like, as an added bonus, it works as a doo-doo. I don't want to shit on the doo-doos because we love them, but, you know, could be words too.
I thought you guys did a good job shoehorning the words into the doo-doots.
Yeah.
And one thing you guys kept, which I think is integral to the song enjoyment, and it's sort of it's meta. It's not about the lyrics, but your bloodline, girl, your bloodline, the ability to be able to do the shout back up is important, I feel like, for enjoyment of the song.
Yes.
Like, this is a song, this and the original version, if someone's singing it at karaoke, you know you got everyone going, girl, like, that's a great way, yeah, to
all the way to the back by the bathrooms. People are doing the backup vocals on this one at karaoke night. This is a Hall of Fame backup vocal song, so it's crucial to the punch up as well. You don't phone
Hell
those
yeah.
in. Well, I think we can consider this one punched up.
That's fire.
Fuck, dude.
Wow. Yeah, I should have played this one. This song has been punched up. And that brings us to the final segment of our show, in which we pick your brain and find out about a song that you like, and that's in a segment we call Walk-In Music.
What is your walk-in in music?
There's few things I like more than forcefully shoehorned into whatever specific situation you needed for. There's a comedy in, like, you know this song? Well, we need to say walk-in music. Watch us fucking wrench it in there. Fucking awesome.
What is your walk-in in music? I'll go first this week. I picked a song just thinking about being in Brandy's shoes and thinking about the sequel to this song. Just like, what is the fifth, sixth verse that we never get to hear, and this tale is getting weaving out in the original, of course, which to me, no matter what the narrator says, that this guy is a good guy and he was an honest man, I cannot believe it. And for me, it is inevitable that she is eventually going to get suspicious and go follow him to his next stop down at Santa Barbara, or he's going to forget, he's going to, like, mess up his day planner and mix up his contacts and, like, bring the girl into his other woman into the wrong bar or something. And Brandy's going to wise up and find out about the other woman or the other 100 women that this guy is stringing along, and she shows up to confront him And this is my walk-in music as I'm Brandy now in this scenario. And this is my confrontation song.
Don't even think about calling me crazy.
Where I found out, I got proof. I saw you peeping. I saw you peeping.
When I turned and looked at you, you tried to play it off, but I tell that you two were friends. She was looking like she was hurt like a
This is my throwdown song in which I break it off, I shove it in his face, you're a cheater. And of course, as you know, this song is Who Is She to You by Brandy.
He did it. He did it to us. One of us was going to do it, and Evan did it to us.
There's something going on. Who Is She to You, sings Brandy.
I like to think that at least one of our listeners opened up this episode this week thinking that we were going to punch up a song called Looking Glass
by Brandy.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are that listener, please send us a tweet. We want to give you an RT so hard. If you thought this episode was going to be about a song called Looking Glass.
But Brandy, the resurgence of the song Brandy is leaving money on the table. Not covering this.
Brandy could cover Brandy.
Brandy could cover Brandy, and people would flip.
People would lose their shit. It would actually be bad. Like people would go too crazy.
It'd be a problem.
Be like, riots.
It would be an issue.
There'd be a historical drama made about the event called The Purge. Brandy.
Guardians of the Galaxy fans in a fight with Moesha fans.
Just about the day that Brandy released Brandy and people just fucking lost their shit, running out on the streets, smashing car windows with golf clubs.
And people will talk about this like
and paid no price.
Like, it'll have its own Wikipedia entry.
The Purge Brandy.
The end of the Jersey Shore sound happened.
The Jersey Shore sound so fake.
Oh. Andrew, what's your song?
My walk-in song, I was inspired to pick this when I was cruising the 1972 into the year list. We're talking about like how it is impossible that a song like Brandy would be at the top of the year-end chart. It wasn't even at the top. It was number 12.
You mean how unlikely because of the type of song it is?
Yeah, I think mostly I'm talking about the lyrical content.
Yeah,
this kind of like painting this picture of this, you know, sea shanty, you know, coastal grandma
life. It's different. It's a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, but I picked this song because it was the number one song of 1972. I love this song, but my jaw was on the floor realizing what an enormous hit it was just from a musical standpoint. Like in this song, a stand-up bass player is playing two notes at the same time sometimes. This is Roberta Flack, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. It's such a gorgeous song. And I don't know, you just do something with generic with it. Just walk in to make out or with my wife or something. You know, who cares? The song's too good to have a good scenario for.
Ever I saw your face.
I would do anything to this perfect song.
It's so good. And like this is off her first album. It didn't come out till she was 30. She was like a school teacher.
Rose in your eyes.
You're right, though. I can't believe this would be a number one year-end song. Everyone understood it's the perfect song.
It's very hard for me to imagine an elementary school teacher in the year 2022 being discovered at age 30. And being like, well, I put this on my album, and it's just number one.
You know, I didn't look this up, so I guess don't hold me to it. Or hold me to it. I don't care if you hold me to it. But I heard that she maybe had a side gig accompanying like rehearsals for artists at like a big venue or something like that, and got discovered doing that, like doing her side gig.
I think that was a transitional gig to where she was discovered. Yes. She's a very, very talented pianist. Anyway, this is an awesome album. If you don't know this album, go listen to it. First Take.
Great pick.
Oh, I will. This is a great fucking song.
Yeah. Okay, man. What is your scenario?
Okay, so the aforementioned, you know, I've been talking about henchmen and shit. So somebody's got a group of... a group of bad actors, a group of ill mercenaries, some assholes have my dog Arthur hostage, and he's a senior dog, and he's down there, and one of the main baddies is walking around with like a big sword and puts the sword like in the dirt by Arthur and is like, look, when your master, your father, your best friend, whatever they're referring to me as, is like, when Gabrus arrives, we're using you as bait. When we get him, you will have both of you. And then that's exactly what we need to accomplish our, you know, complicated esoteric plans.
Of course.
We need Gabrus for some reason.
Basically, John Wick.
More angry.
It's like John Wick.
It's a little bit of John Wick. There's a sword in the ground. And then they're sort of like out around, like outside near like a ridge, you know, in some woods. There's maybe a body of water. And then all of a sudden, the song Princes of the Universe by Queen kicks in, and it's not diegetic, but clearly the bad guys are up to, they're like, what's going on? Something's happening. And then they all look up, and standing at the top of the ridge is me, stripped to the fucking waist. I have like some sort of like smear of mud or paint that represents that it's wartime. And then the song kicks in as I die.
Oh, their doom has come.
I'm sailing fucking down, and I land in like the Terminator. Pull the sword from the dirt, and then they all start scrambling for their weapons.
Too late for them. They stole the wrong dog. When this drum riff starts hitting, I know the heads are flying off.
Yep.
And here we are, the princes of the universe. Here we belong, fighting for survival. We've got to be.
Oh, this absolutely rocks. Great massacre scene.
But also just like from a music supervisor standpoint, great music cue. You know, this is not a top 10, not even a top 25 Queen song. So there's a lot of people in the audience being like, oh, this is a new one.
Yeah, you
like,
might haven't think heard this before. New
band. Yes. So it's a little bit of a cop-out because I think it was written specifically for the Highlander soundtrack. So
no.
Like swords and stuff like
of
that
course.
Is built into it a little bit. So it's a little bit of a cop-out on my part.
You're but pulling I can't your help but picture.
When it's like, have inside me blood of kings. That's when the footage goes to slow-mo as the head pops off.
Yeah.
As I flip the guy over my shoulder.
Yeah.
The Immortals.
And it all ends with, I finally get knocked down. The main bad guy has got my own sword to my throat. And I'm about to go. And then Arthur, you know, because the dog's got to have some agency. Arthur bites this dude's ankle. And he's like, ah! I grab the sword, spin into the gut as he falls on top of me.
Yeah.
Curtains.
Waiting for
Fuck, man. That song slaps.
Yeah,
that
the dog so in distress hyped. Has to come around and like help you beat the last bad guy. You know, he's
yes,
not that
of course.
Pathetic.
I can't do it by myself.
Sheer animal energy for that song.
Makes
great
a
revenge
lot,
song.
A lot of sense that it was written for Highlander, though, because Highlander
so
was...
The nose, I have inside me blood of kings.
Yeah, they were indeed princes of the universe. Yeah.
Man, awesome pick. I mean, like Andrew said, it's like that's a music supervisor's dream because nobody knows that Queen song. Everybody only knows their hits. And it made me think of the music supervisor in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 who's picking Brandy, but that's kind of written in the script. They made some other choices in the movie. It's a scene that really sucks where there's a... There's a guy who's like killing all his crewmates on the ship, and he does it.
Oh, yeah.
In the soundtrack, as I recall, the only reason I remember it is because it's the song I love. Come a little bit closer, you're my kind of man, by Jay and the Americans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it totally sucks. It's the wrong song for that scene, and you're like supposed to like this guy, but he's actually doing a really uncalled for massacre. Like, the whole scene is wrong, but if they had played Princes of the Universe in that same spot would have flipped the whole thing. It would have worked. Anyway, wow. That's my pitch for the director's
Have
cut.
You considered a sideways move into Hollywood music supervising, Evan?
Guys, you know, this doing the walking music segment made me want to share something else. I'm not really in the habit of posting drafts on Punch Ups because we try a lot of stuff that doesn't work here. But I did do one clip of a song where Brandy is singing in Brandy.
At night, when the bars close down, Brandy loves a man, and Brandy said,
it's another way to give Brandy agency.
Just put Brandy in Brandy. You know, it didn't work, but you had to try it. You got to at least try it. We didn't even really ask you when you came on the show, like, what is the thing that we should be pimping out for you, John? Because now is the time of the show in which we beg our listeners to go listen to your podcast instead of ours.
Yeah, sure. So if you want to watch something instead of listen to something, maybe your ears are tired, the oral experience is draining. Mm-hmm. Let's get a little visual. 101 Places to Party Before You Die, Thursday nights at 11 p.m. on True. And then also, I'm required as a HeadGum employee to promote Corked, HeadGum's first scripted podcast that that Giancarlo and John wrote. I am a voice on it along with Betsy Sodaro, Mary Holland, Anthony Gio, and Whitmer Thomas. Good crew. Mary Hollandaise. Good group of people. Check it out, would ya?
Yes, a scripted podcast? Say no more. I'm enthralled. We'll get a link going to Corked in the description of this show, but we've had extremely enjoyable time on this episode, and I know you would like to go spend some more time with Gabrus and the other HeadGummers.
John, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much for picking Brandy off the fan suggestions. If you're a
legendary
fan
pick
who wants to add to our fan suggestion list, just send us a tweet at Punch Up the Jam or on Instagram. And of course, if you want to just sit around your house and listen to just the Punch Up, the one place you can get all of our Punch Ups as MP3s is on patreon.com/Gregory Brothers.
The Patreon is a great way to get on our nice list. Make sure that your request makes it into the show rotation. But you can follow the show at Punch Up the Jam. You can follow me at Get Some Evan. You can follow Andrew
at A Rose Gregory.
And Gabrus?
At Gabrus.
That's wow. G-A-B-R-U-S. I love it. What a thrill. What a pleasure. This has been Punch Up the Jam.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
And every episode, we don't know how it's going to come out.
Let's punch it.
But this jam has been punched. Brandy.
That was a HeadGum Original.